It was one of the first strikes where there was an awful lot of anger. It was a really difficult strike. There were an awful lot of scabs. It was bigger, so there was a lot riding on it.
Bernie and I were there. We said, what do you think you're going to do? And they said, we're going to tow the cars away. We said, no, you're not towing those cars away. You don't know if there are people in there, are customers, or if there are people out on the line here. So no cars were ever towed.
There was a guy that came out with a scab, and he worked for the Manitoba Liquor Commission, which is a unionized shop. And I walked up to him, and I grabbed his tie, and I says, what the hell are you doing? You know, you got a scab.
The reason I went for 6 months was mainly because of that manager. It wasn't about the money. It wasn't about those issues.
It was phenomenal. All I saw was a wall of people, and well organized. They knew what they had to do. They knew exactly where to pick it.
Lots of people where they had two incomes and they were both going to lose them, and it was hard on families. So we did a lot on that picket line to build relationships and keep everybody together.
You are listening to Celebrating Our Past, Preparing Our Future, a podcast series created through a collaboration between UFCW Local 832 and the Oral History Center at the University of Winnipeg, documenting a variety of events and issues within the union's history and what they mean for Local 832 today. This episode is entitled Labor's War, Remembering the Safeway Strike of 1978. The Safeway strike of 1978 is one of three retail strikes in the history of United Food and Commercial Workers Local 832, along with the Dominion strike of 1973 and the Superstore strike of 1987. The Safeway strike of 1978 saw massive picket lines and militancy from the rank and file. This was a sign of the times, as 1978 saw massive labor disputes and strikes across Canada due to the fight over price and wage control. Price and wage control was a program created by the Trudeau federal government to try to counteract rising inflation. In particular, workers and unions were told to exercise self-restraint on wages and benefits while inflation increased the cost of living. As you will also hear, a key issue was that of equal pay for women working in Safeway stores. The Safeway strike started in June of 1978 with nearly 2,000 Safeway employees going out on strike. Adding to these numbers were the workers at Lucerne, Empress Foods, liquor stores, and the construction industry, all going out on strike in the summer of 1978. The following are some of the stories and memories from UFCW Local 832 members on the Safeway strike of 1978. Former UFCW Local 832 President Bernard Kristoff explains the Safeway strike from his perspective, focusing mainly on the issue of price and wage controls.
In 1978, we had a strike with Safeway. The issue was the leftover from the price and wage control. We had signed a collective agreement, I think for 2 or 3 years at the time, and price and wage control came the first year of the contract. And the law was that if you are in a collective agreement, you don't have to follow price and wage control until your agreement expired. So when the agreement expired, I think the price control was lifted, but Safeway still wanted to be under price and wage control. In other words, wanted to give us as little money as possible. And it was really only wage control prices. They couldn't control prices. And that's what triggered the strike.
It is important to keep in mind that the strike was also driven by local economics as well. At the time, Safeway Canada was the largest retail grocer in Western Canada. This partially drove the Safeway strike, as the union decided to strike Safeway specifically because of its large market share, and that the majority of UFCW Local 832 members were from Safeway at the time. Darlene Jevitz, a union rep at the time, explains some of the background to the strike.
It was one of the first strikes where there was an awful lot of anger. It was a really difficult strike. There were an awful lot of scabs. It was bigger, and people were very frustrated. And the bakery and the milk plant were also out. Safeway's bakery and milk plant were out as well. So there was a lot riding on it.
As noted in the introduction, the dairy and bakery for Safeway were also on strike. These workers stayed out for several weeks after the retail workers went back to work. Former UFCW president Robert Ziegler explains what work was like in the bakery in 1978 and how issues with management was one of the main grievances.
What really got me going in this direction was that strike in 1978. It was a bakery, long hours, hot work, and we had a plant manager who was really not a very nice person. You know, he might have made money for the company, but when in 78, when I was, you know, when people were getting married, it was hard to get any time off. People would be getting, have a wedding social. Oh, you can't have the time off for that. I mean, if you get married, and it was real that. The reason I went for 6 months was mainly because of that manager. It wasn't about the money. It wasn't about those issues. I mean, that started it, but it went on so long. Not one person crossed the picket line from the workers, which is unusual. Usually, you know, at some point they'll try and convince some people. At the end of it, he was told to stay up in his office and not deal with any of the people. They hired a new person, a new operations who dealt with people on the floor, Bob Treehart. Things became fantastic, but you know, how people were treated, how they were handled, I think got me going, pushed me in the direction that it was going to.
Another important issue of the time was that of equal pay for women in the workplace. In 1978, women made less than men in retail stores even if similar work was being done. This was another main issue for the strike. Susan Hart Kolobaba, a cashier at the time, explains what motivated her to walk the picket line.
What I remember about that the most was how we were asking a lot of people to hit the picket lines over issues that were not everybody's. We did have more men working at the grocery stores then. You could use that as a career and make a living at it and support your family back then. Now it's really largely women, and it's part-time work, and they're not going to be there long. 2 years and they're gone sort of thing. But back then it was a career, so there was more men in the workplace. And one of the things they understood is that the women were doing the same work as they were. It was a matter of how much of the time were we both doing the same thing. And the men were being paid more to stock shelves, and then they didn't have their wages reduced when it got really busy and they came and worked in a check stand. But we didn't get our wages raised when we left the check stand because it wasn't very busy and went and stocked shelves. So they understood, a lot of them had people in their families working there. Some had parents working there. Some had girlfriends working there. And those men realized that they would all benefit if women were being paid the same. And there would be less compartmentalization as well. And so they actually came out and were prepared to stand on a picket line with us. And that was very gratifying. That was very gratifying for us. There was still issues around wages in general and those kinds of things, but they weren't saying, well, if you get a dollar, I want a dollar. They were quite prepared to say, I want a dollar and you can have $1.25. Let's get you where you need to be for the work you're doing. So that was very helpful to us. But it took us a while to get there. There was families working there. You know, we had lots of people where they had two incomes and they were both going to lose them. And it was hard on families. So we did a lot on the picket line to build relationships and keep everybody together. We had some who went in at first and then came out on the line with us afterwards because, you know, we talked to them about ways we could help them make ends meet. And so they came out. A lot of the people that went in and stayed in were people who just couldn't figure out a way to make ends meet, but they were always friendly when they came out. They did hire scabs who were not so friendly, and that one wasn't fun, and they paid them more than we made, which was even more annoying, outrageous. And a lot of those people would taunt us as they were going in and things like that. So, you know, or they'd hold their paycheck up at the window and show us how much they were making when we weren't. And, you know, those kinds of things didn't leave our minds when we went back to work.
With all these issues contributing to the Safeway strike of 1978, the strike itself saw great numbers of mass pickets, supported by other unions. Joan Dudas, a clerk in the meat department at Safeway, and Dennis Allard, a union rep at the time, talk about the mass pickets that took place during the strike.
There was select stores, select areas where they opened the stores. I was at Portage and Brunel. I forget how long we were out on the street, but then they pulled us and took us over to Ellison Wall because they were open. They wanted us picketing where there was public going in. You know, during the day it was sort of mediocre. We'd block the driveways, we'd go slow. We didn't harass anybody. You know, people talked to you. You explained why we were striking, not because we wanted to, but because the company wasn't being fair, which most companies aren't. And some people were understanding, they would leave. Some people, you're not telling me where I can shop or what I can do. Other businesses would come and support us.
That was in 1978. What we had done, we told the strikers to bring their cars and park right on the Safeway parking lot. It's public access. So we had about 30-some cars from the strikers parked there. And I guess Safeway must have seen them coming out of the car. So they phoned their towing company. And the towing company came up, and Bernie and I were there. We said, what do you think you're going to do? And they said, we're going to tow the cars away. We said, no, you're not towing those cars away. You don't know if there are people and there are customers or if there are people out on the line here. So no cars were ever towed. The only thing is, we got photographed, Bernie and I, because the company had all kinds of cameras out there. And Bernie and I, we were supposed to clear the strikers from entering inside the bay where the trucks were backing up to unload their goods. So Bernie and I were supposed to go and tell the strikers to move. Well, we were there all right, but we weren't directing them to get the hell out of the way, so the truckers were stalled, you know. And Safeway tried to make bones out of that. It never went to a court situation, but I know there was some legal action taken, but it didn't go anywhere after that. What they wanted us to do was to stand on each side and leave it open and hold the picketers away from us. That was the largest police detachment we ever saw during a strike. Yeah, the reason for that, I think, is because we had approached the Winnipeg Labor Council and Manitoba Federation of Labor, and we had asked their support to load up the parking lot like we had done on Fermor. But on Fermor was only UFCW strikers. So I don't know how many cars showed up, but there was quite a bunch of cars on the parking lot. And then we had a lot of picketers out there, but right the whole front of that store, well, I'm saying 25 to 30 police officers lined up, you know, just standing there. Nothing happened. They just wanted to make sure that we were not harassing the customers from going in. And that was fine. We walked in front of the police officers with our line. Just kept walking like that. And, of course, the line, there was two entrances, one here and one there for the store. So we just... And we had enough people that we could cover the whole thing. The officers were there to make sure that the peace was kept, but there was no problem. There was, you know, we didn't get a situation where the cops had to bring somebody away.
While there were mass pickets during the strike, many workers did cross the picket line. This added to an already tense situation. Joan Dudas, who you previously heard, and Rob McPherson, a young clerk at Safeway at the time of the strike, talk about the tensions between the workers on the picket line and the replacement or scab workers.
And so we had this mass picket scheduled, I think it was a Friday. I don't know who decided this, but the word started going through the crowd that we were just going to slowly leave and go over to Sergeant Maryland. So when I got over to Sergeant Maryland, there was a crowd over there, a big crowd. And things were getting rowdy because I was watching one guy that was like stripping on the windows, and they were pulling all this stripping off the windows. And it was getting around 9 o'clock. The store was closing. They were bringing out the scabs. And I remember this one young girl. She was crying. I mean, you know, you look out and there's a big crowd, maybe 300 people. There was a mob, and there was a lot of chanting and shouting and stuff. And she was crying, and they brought her out, and they had a station wagon, and they literally just threw her through that back window into the back of that station wagon, and they took off. And there was a guy that came out with a scab, and he worked for the Manitoba Liquor Commission, which is a unionized shop. And he's bringing this girl out. And I'm not a vicious person, but I was. I was caught up in the momentum. And I walked up to him, and I grabbed his tie, and I says, "What the hell are you doing? You know, you got a scab." And he told me to leave him alone. And then I sort of like, ooh, realized what I was doing. But I was just swept up in the emotion of it. I still remember that. And I was scolding him that he should be involved with this scab. Because she wasn't a regular worker. She was a hired on. And I thought to myself afterwards, you better be careful. You know, you're going to end up in jail. And then what are you going to do? And so the next time when I went to the last picket, I was there, but I didn't get involved in anything because I could have really got myself into some trouble there.
But we'll go in the, we'll fast forward into, I'm probably going to say about the third week of the strike. And I remember waking up, showering fast, seeing that my parents, I had to get there because we're having a mass picket demonstration. And I was going down there, and my neighbor was following, and I didn't realize that it was the union shops. A lot of union shop workers were coming in to support us. And I was excited. I thought, this is the cat's meow. Maybe we can get back to work finally and show safely that everybody's really serious about this. That there's more trailers have been dropped off, more picket signs were dished out. You can see people using place cards, what union they're from, different locals from the Teamsters, different locals. Postal Union had their number behind them, and it was phenomenal. All I saw was a wall of people, and well organized. They knew what they had to do, they knew exactly where to picket, and number one, they're going to see a lot of mass trucks coming in on a Saturday because they have to fulfill these shelves in case people break through. And they were stopping trucks, a lineup of service trucks trying to get in. Nothing was getting in that morning, nothing. Not when you have almost, and from this is what I gather, almost 2,000 picketers were at the crossroads, formed by probably six local unions. And it was getting to be so bad where the police had to step in. So when the police brought in, they called a task unit to make sure that we can park the Red Sea and make sure these trucks can get in. But it was going to be a very, very slow process. Shoppers were still trickling in, not as many anymore. Bernard Christophe, bless his heart, dead smack in the middle of everything, would come up to a gentleman and say, "Please, sir, let me be the first one to take you to Dominion myself. I urge you not to cross this picket line." He says, all these people are fighting for better wages, pension, benefits, and I know you don't understand, but he says, maybe if I drive you over and tell you what it's all about, you'll have a different perspective. And even some of the high local reps did the same thing. So, I mean, even though there was a streamline of customers still coming in, there was quite a streamline of customers going away. So it was a pretty impressive day. But it was what was really, really disturbing to a lot of us was when we went back to picket, we were missing quite a few more individuals that were picketing us that Saturday. And we're talking like, you know, another week went by and we're now, when we had a nucleus of about, there used to be about 60 of us. Now we're down to 30. We're missing some bodies. Where are these bodies going? We found out that if we came at nighttime and did some picketing, we might find out where these individuals are. Bernie Adamanchuk, Dennis Allard had asked a few workers to set up picket lines overnight and try and make it rough for any trucks that come in overnight. Because if they can't deliver in the day, they're going to try overnight. And a big semi came in, an independent brought the groceries in. We didn't have enough people to actually block the semi. If anybody knows Crossroads, or any of the older stores, they had blinds that were closed, so you couldn't see in. So, and they had these blinders out on the windows, but if you really squinted, you could see through cracks what goes on. And to our amazement, we saw through the cracks exactly what happened to some of our friends that used to picket. And I remember Derek saying, "Do you believe what I see?" And I said, "Wow, these are the guys that knew better. These are the part-timers, our lead hand part-timers that have worked for the company 5-6 years ahead of us that should know better." And we picked out probably about 6 or 7 that were working with possibly more Safeway workers or scabs at the time. Heck, they're all scabs. And it's like your fits of rage. Like, how dare you? Are you kidding me? So it was. We were learning more and more each day that a lot of people were crossing. But in the same breath, we also learned that there was a lot more talks going on between Safeway and the union.
While these kind of incidents are common during strikes, it nonetheless contributed to very strained relations in Safeway stores after the strike. Both Joan Dudas and Rob McPherson talk about the tensions between those who stayed on the picket line and those who crossed after the strike was over.
I was glad when it was over because there's a lot of hard feelings. A lot of hard feelings. I was lucky we had only one in our store, but still, we segregated him. And when I went into other stores, I was told that's the table in the lunchroom for the scabs. And I think some of us older people that were on that picket line, we don't ever forget that. We don't ever forget that. At least I haven't. Because it was a big impression on me. And I was very glad to go back to work. And you know, we were almost made to feel like they were doing us a favor, letting us come back to work. I mean, that was my job. And I was there for to support my living, to get a fair living from that company who at that time made probably billions. Safeway was very, very big then. I don't think even Superstore was around at that time. But just to get a fair wage. You know, those companies have no conscience. If they can cut you down, they'll cut you down. Like people say, they got stockholders. If I was a stockholder, I'd want to have the company do the best for me. But you know, if you're fair and if you're honest, all the rest comes. You don't have to fight for it. If those companies run their companies fair and honest, their profits will come. Treat their people well. You know, you treat a person well, they'll work hard for you. You treat a person shabby, they say, "Why should I?"
This was a long strike. I can see a lot of people were getting flustered. They couldn't get more than $50 if you were part-timer. School was getting closer, and besides the full-timers, there was only a handful of part-timers left. Before long, it was getting down to just a few of us, and unfortunately, there's none of us. The stores had opened up, we'd all gone back, and a lot of finger-pointing. I mean, I will admit I had crossed. I thought I was probably one of the last ones to cross, because at this point in time, we learned that they're pretty much the whole strike's ready to be over, so we did learn later on the strike isn't over until the union tells you to go back. And we went back a little bit prematurely, and yeah, we got our hands slapped over. You know, there's a lot of animosity with a lot of the workers, not as much on us as opposed to the ones that crossed 5 weeks ago. But still, you cross, you're marked. And yeah, it really took me back. I was really despondent after that. My parents had a lot of threatening phone calls. We got egged at the house a few times. Our neighbors didn't speak to us for a long time. A couple had sat down with me. They were a little bit disappointed. It was settled. They did maybe not get everything they wanted to, but it was good because the part-timers benefit on it. And the full-timers got what they wanted as far as benefits and pension goes. But it sure opened my eyes to really learn what it was all about. This is somebody's livelihood. Might not be my livelihood. What I'm studying is I want to move on other than working at Safeway. And here I am in an interview today, and I'm 36 years strong in the company. And do I know what it's all about now? No. You learn something new every day. You learn something new every contract. I don't think you'll know everything there is to run a union, but you definitely know the important things about the union. And that something is when you're fighting for something you believe in, you fight to the bitter end. And if you feel as a union shop steward or a union rep that somebody's about to cross, you sit them down and say, you know what, let me tell you my story. And when I'm finished, if you feel you have to cross, then you cross. But the aftermath or the consequences could be very severe, because they were severe back in my day.
While the end of the strike was neither a total victory or a total loss for the union, it did lead to comparatively good wages and benefits for Safeway workers. Darlene Jevitz explains the results of the Safeway strike of 1978.
It was purely economic. This was an economic strike, and it was over economic issues. And after 8 weeks, it was settled, and I think it was pretty much a saw-off in terms of what people got, but it sure made Safeway not want to have a strike again real soon. And I mean, we wanted more money and they didn't want to give us things. And so, you know, as is the way in most strikes, you don't get everything you walk out for, and the employer doesn't get everything either. With the Safeway strike, it was a matter of muscle flexing, and that needed to happen sometimes, you know. Over time, employers, you know, start to infringe on things slowly.
What can we learn from the Safeway strike of 1978? While UFCW Local 832 hasn't had a retail strike since the Superstore strike of 1987, it was in many ways these battles that the union took on that led to retail workers in Manitoba obtaining comparatively good wages and benefits. Through these stories, we can begin to understand the complexities of the strike itself, as well as the militant core to the union led to these benefits for UFCW members in Manitoba. I've been listening to the podcast series Celebrating Our Past, Preparing Our Future, documenting the rich history of United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 832. The podcast series is produced through a partnership between United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 832, and the Oral History Center at the University of Winnipeg. Music by Broke for Free, Christian Bjorklund, Gillicuddy, Jazz Har, and Project 5AM. Narration by Scott Price, with production assistance from Kent Davies. For more information about the Oral History Center, go to oralhistorycenter.ca. For more information about UFCW Local 832, go to ufcw832.com.